Hello, it's Kirsty here, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 4 of the Two Fat Expats. And why are we fat? Because this podcast is all about living a fat expat life. It's about making the most of it and filling your expat life to the brim. I'm in Doha, Qatar this week, and Nikki is in Hamburg, Germany. And this episode, we're talking about careers and the expat life. We've both had our career ups and downs. We've moved to countries where our career has prospered and countries where it was non-existent due to not having a work visa. But I'm interested, how has it worked out for you? Drop us a line and let us know. Okay, so we're also talking to the very much loved Sarah Derrick this week, and she's making a return to Two Fat Expats to give us an update on how her career's going and how she discovered her passion, which is what she's doing now. We're also going to get to meet a couple of fabulous expat women who've done a range of things while they've been on the move. So let's get cracking, shall we? Let's go and say hello to serial expat Nikki Moffat. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you?
I'm good. Now, before we get into your career, I want to know, what are we now, week 9 of the move or week 10?
I'm going to go with week 9.
Okay. And how is Happy Hamburg in week 9?
Well, Happy Hamburg's a little bit grey. The sky's a little bit grey. We took a temperature, we took a hit on the thermometer this week. That's what it's called. Whatever. However you measure the temperature, it's gone down by about 12 to 15 degrees. So yesterday I was talking to a friend, a US friend who's just moved here too, and we were panicking about whether it's too late to start our kids on vitamin D. Mm-hmm. Because apparently by January, if you want to be a person, you have to start your vitamin D now.
Why? What will happen to you if you don't have it?
I don't know. Perhaps you come become a zombie. I'm not sure. But I think it can lead to issues like depression and as SAD, which is seasonal affectation disorder. I'm definitely impacted by my access to sunshine. So, yeah. I just went to my amazon.de account and ordered up some vitamin D.
I too am someone that's very affected by sunshine and light. I'm one of those people that lives in a house where it's all very white and light, and I like windows and sunshine. Yes. I cannot, you know, and there are some people that just love a dark room, don't they? They love all the lights off.
No, and see, that's you. I think you usually marry. Did you marry someone who prefers a dark room, Kirsty? Because that's how it rolls in our family. My husband can't sleep unless all the lights are off and everything's quiet and it's pitch black. And I'm like, whatever. I'm all about the light too. Whenever we see a house when we move countries, my husband Sam always says, oh, yeah, Nikki, you'll like this one. It's got lots of windows. Yeah.
Right. So today we are talking about new country, new career. And this is very much a ongoing topic. You wouldn't even call it a hot topic. You'd call it an everyday topic with expat women, probably in particular. One day that will change and it will just be for all expats. But new country, new career discussion is all about, were you forced to consider a new career when you changed country, or did you have this beautiful benefit of being able to sit back and think about your career maybe more so than you would have in your home country? And I know it's the question that you asked in all of your interviews, Nikki.
Well, the question was, do you think you would have done the same things that you've done if you had stayed in your home country?
And I'm going to ask you that question now. Would you have done? So maybe do a very quick wrap up for everybody. What has been your career progression from before you left to now?
Okay, so before I left, I worked in telecommunications and project management, and I fell into that career, if you want to put it in inverted commas. After I left uni, I had a year off, and then I went back and I started temping, and then I took a permanent role at the company I was temping with and just built my career from there. By the time I left, or by the time I had a baby, I'd been working in that field for which is business process re-engineering and project management. and telecommunications for about 8 years. And I was just about to go on maternity leave. Well, I was just about to come back from maternity leave when we actually left the country. So I don't know what would have happened next.
What sort of impact do you think moving has had on your career?
Well, you know, I went to Hong Kong, and about after just under a year there, I was able to secure a role. I worked for Macquarie Bank in Hong Kong, and that's a job I wouldn't have got in Australia. And I know that because I applied for a job with Macquarie in Australia and I didn't get it. So I was able to do that, and I loved my job. And it was still sort of project management. I was the business manager for Asia for the equity research business there. But it was, you know, I looked after 11 countries, and I got to travel. I got to sort of be in that fast moving paced banking secret world before the GFC, and I absolutely loved it, and I really enjoyed it. And I don't think, one, I couldn't have done the same job in Australia because I wouldn't have had someone who lived in our house with our family and could take care of my children when I wasn't there and traveling. The hours were very long, and I just had someone who had my back, which was my live-in helper, and obviously my husband as well. But we teamed a lot on the travel side of things. So I don't know whether I would have ever been able to have that job in Australia or a job like it. So I am so grateful for the opportunity that I had for the 5 years that I was in Hong Kong and working there.
Yeah. And then you've got the other side of the story, though, as well, with other moves where you weren't able to work. And how did that work for you, Nikki, in that you worked when your kids were babies in Hong Kong, but yeah, then you were at home with them when you were in South Africa because, you know, you couldn't work there. So how was that adjustment?
It was really difficult, and it was part of the reason why I struggled to adjust to South Africa, you know, because I'd had 6 years and I'd loved my job and I loved Hong Kong, and it was my first posting. And, you know, it was a first expat experience. And I think it was, and the not working, you know, you go back to a home environment. You don't speak to a lot of adults during the day. You just got your kids, which is fine. They're lovely. But, you know, when you're used to having a lot of another outlet and a lot of interaction with other people, it's very hard to move back to that. And that's when the stereotypes come into play. And I like to think that, you know, I'm not necessarily a stereotype, but I did learn to play golf and to surf when I was in South Africa. And what about you, Kirsty? Like, how, what happened when, before you left Australia and then since?
So I was pregnant when I left Australia, but previous to that I had been working in account management and recruitment, which I loved and really believed that I would do forever, because I was one of those happy, smiley, I've got the job that I always wanted to have kind of people. It really suited me. And we left, like a lot of expats do, because I was going to be having a year off for maternity leave. Greg was offered a great role in Jakarta, and we could earn as much money with him working in Jakarta as we could have with both of us working at home. So it was kind of a very much a financial and, you know, why not for this stage. And then I have the story that many have of, you know, 1 year turned into two, turned into three. We went to Kuala Lumpur, and I was pregnant again. And part of that was because I knew I couldn't get a work permit there. And so I kind of, for the next few years, we then did a move to Libya. Working wasn't a possibility there, but I had three children in that time. So that was all fine. When we got to Canada, I had my fourth child, and then I went back to work full time when he was about 5 months old. And I went
as you do.
I guess too, I was one of those people. I was talking to a woman about this yesterday, that the whole time I wasn't working, while I was very much enjoying being able to be at home with my babies and do the baby toddler, getting everybody sort of organised thing, I was very conscious of my career and what the impact was going to be. And I was saying to someone yesterday, I wish I would have just relaxed a bit about that because hindsight's a wonderful thing. You know, it's all going to work out once it all has worked out. But the woman I was speaking to yesterday is going through the same thing. They've moved here for her husband's career. She now has been at home for a few months and she said, you know, I'm starting to feel that kind of 1950s housewife thing is starting to take form of, you know, I'm the primary caregiver, I'm doing all the cooking, washing, cleaning, I'm looking after everything with our children, and I'm just starting to get a bit nervous about when am I going to get a job and how it's going to look. And I think I did have a little bit of that of, yeah, how long can you be out of work before it becomes an issue that you have to change career completely? When I moved to Qatar, I had to rethink career again because with children and school pickups, we'd moved here for my husband's job. I was finding it very hard to work out how I was going to work those same sort of hours, you know, the 8 till 5.30 with yeah. children that needed to be picked up at 12.30 and children that needed to be picked up at, 3. It couldn't work. So that's when I changed career and started writing. And I was just very, very lucky that things kind of worked out for me writing-wise.
And did you do a bit of relocation consulting in the middle of that?
I did. I forgot about that. I did.
Long-time stalker. Long-time stalker.
I did some work where I would do Skype calls with people that were relocating to countries that I had lived in. Yeah, that was good actually. And that was a really easy thing to do, right, because I was doing that and that's another popular expat gig, isn't it? Yeah, I did do that for a little while. But obviously the job that I had last year where I worked for the Barefoot Investor, and this is sort of my personal thing of I think how things can work out if you just start doing something that motivates you is I really enjoyed writing and I didn't know that that it was my thing, do you know, but it very quickly became my thing. And because of the writing, I got very involved in social media and being online and learning how to do that. And because of going to those sort of blogging conferences and looking at what other people were doing, I became very interested in podcasting and, you know, taught myself how to do podcasting. And I know there is no way that I would have had the job I had last year at the Barefoot Investor had I not done those things, because he was looking for someone that, you know, knew how to write and edit and at that stage podcast and work within, you know, that sort of online world. And had I not sort of kicked that off from home, it never would have happened.
So I have a question about that. So I'm not a great writer, but I'm very involved in social media, and that's how we initially met. And I love it as well, and I spend a lot of time doing it. But how do you – I don't ever feel confident enough to back myself in a conversation. You know, I mean, how did you get to the point where you were confident enough to say, yeah, I can do this job? Yeah.
I'm about to start a new project in January that has really been about me having to back myself, which I wouldn't have done a year ago. And I think that's from working with a guy who did back himself very much and watching him work. I thought, I need to do more of that. I need to do more of knowing I could do this. To answer your question, I think it was a mix of I was writing online for 6 years, and I would say I am still not entirely confident about my abilities with that, because I think all writers kind of think they're not very good, but they keep at it because they love it. That's just my theory. Mia Friedman once said to me when I said I was really crappy that most good writers think they're really crappy. It's the bad ones that don't think they are crappy, and that's the unfortunate thing. So I think I have crippling self-doubt when it comes to the writing side of things. But when it came to the social media, I guess I started to see people get careers in social media who I'd known through the blogging world, and I was thinking, I could do that. I know how to do that. And then with the podcasting, Sarah and I had done a season and a half of podcasting with two fat expats, and because I'd put myself out there and said I'm doing this and shared it with people and talked to people about it, what happened was when he was looking for someone and he was asking around, someone put my name forward because they could see that I was doing that, and they said, hey, this girl knows how to podcast, she knows how to write and she knows how to edit, she might be a good fit for you. So that's how it all sort of happened for me.
Cool. No, that's good to know, because I think that a lot of people pick up skills and things along the way. I mean, a lot of expat women, without generalizing, do a lot of charity and volunteer work that give them new skill sets that they didn't have before, but would they then turn around and do that, you know, back themselves to be paid to do it? I don't know. So I just wanted to ask that question.
Yeah, I don't think they do. I still don't back myself now. I mean, this whole trip to Singapore, you know, Nikki, you would have seen, is, you know, there's a lot of me with, you know, going to Singapore to meet up and have lunch and do whatever. And it's, you were saying, oh, well, you should offer a Skype session with people as a raffle, or, you know, to, a way to raise money. Right. And you'd said, you know, you should do a Skype session where people, you'll offer to teach people about blogging and social media or writing or whatever. And I was like, oh, I don't think anyone would want to do that. And you were like, no, they would. And I constantly do that. I constantly do, oh, I don't think anyone would want to read that. Oh, I won't write that book. You know, who wants to read that? You know, it's
now, come now, Kirsty. That's the biggest question everyone has for you. When are you going to write a book that everyone can read?
And I think that's it. I don't, because every time I think about it, I think, oh, you know, it feels so self-indulgent, and who would really want to read it? Yeah, which is, I know as this is coming out of my mouth how stupid that I am, you know, that I sound like those people that I would be saying, come on, you can do it, you know, have a bit more faith in yourself. But we all have that self-doubt. So I wanted to start this week with Sarah, the lovely Sarah Derrick, who was the co-host of Two Fat Expats for season one and season two. And I wanted to go back and speak to Sarah because I think she is just the perfect example of how expat life can change your way of thinking career-wise. And I also wanted to show that, you know, so often we see people change careers and we think that it was this instantaneous thing that happened, and we forget that, no, they took four or five different roads to get there. I obviously went for way, way, way too long. I think I talked to her for about 20 minutes and we're allowed to use about 8 or 9 for the podcast. So just for a quick fill-in, at the beginning she was sort of talking about how she'd started her career in television. She worked for the publicity department and then she moved into advertising, and she was a director at an advertising company. When she fell pregnant with Sadie, she then started being an expat and she went off to Abu Dhabi. And she said she was fine doing the stay-at-home mum thing until she came to Doha and Sadie went off to nursery school. Now, Sarah had always thought she was going to have a house full of children and that she would stay at home with them. And if anyone's listened to the podcast before, they'd know that that wasn't to be for Sarah and Matt. So she said once she'd sort of found that Sadie was off filling her days, that was when she started looking at different studies. And I watched Sarah pick up a couple of those things over the last few years. But when it was when she began her librarian studies, I really noticed a distinct change in Sarah. Like, it was like she really had found her thing. And I asked her if she knew instantly that was the case, and she said, yep, it was very quick for her that she realized, this is it, this is what I'm meant to be doing. But then she said something that I thought was really important, and it's what you've touched on, Nikki, is that if she hadn't have traveled, maybe she wouldn't have found her way towards a career that she loves. So let's have a listen to Sarah.
It was always an inkling there and I never did anything about it, and if it wasn't for moving overseas, I would never have sort of gone full circle and gone back to something that really I wanted to do a long, long, long time ago.
I guess it's easy, right? 2020 vision. But do you, because I mean, I can't imagine you not having done all the other things that you've done. Do you know, I think
I can see.
And I needed to do this as well. Like doing the podcast and, like, you know, we really put ourselves out there and we would go to events and you know me, you know how I am when I walk into a room full of strangers. It's like I have the sweat start and, you know, but I've gotten so much confidence after doing that now.
Yes.
I do miss it, but I just, there's only one of me. I wish I could clone myself and be podcast host as well as the sexy librarian, as Matt likes to call me now.
And says, do you find, I guess, on that, how are you managing your time? Because you've now got a full-time job and you're doing yep. this study. You've got a husband yep. that travels probably 3 weeks out of four and a very busy daughter. So yep. how are you coping with it all?
The first month, there was, to be honest, there was a lot of tears. There was a lot of, the hell am I doing? I don't need to be doing all of this. Take me back to the summer, take me back to doing the podcast when I can work from home and I could still pick Sadie up from school. And it's been really hard, really hard. It just took a lot of time to get used to, well, I still have the mummy guilt. I hate it that I don't take Sadie to school or pick her up from school. I absolutely hate it. But I'm there in the afternoons to take her to her activities. Studying, my brain stops by about 7:30 p.m. at night, so that's been really hard because after dinner and after we've put Sadie to bed, that's really been my time with Matt when he's here, to just chill on the couch and watch TV and chat, and that stopped. But the good thing is with him travelling is that nighttime when I'm home on my own and Sadie's asleep, you know, I'm not so sad anymore when Matt's gone because I've got a purpose, I've got to sit down, I've got to write these essays, I've got to get these projects done. So that's good. I feel like I'm finally getting my shit together, kind of, but it's, you know, I've had to learn to say no. I've had to say to friends, you know, I can't go out drinking on the weekend because I have to get up really early and work on an assignment. So I'm learning how to say no. And actually being honest and saying the reason why I'm saying no is because I'm up to my ears in study and I just can't do it. And everyone's been really great.
So says exactly what are you doing at work at the moment? Like a librarian, I don't think really explains exactly what your involvement is.
Okay, so I work in an international school in the middle school and high school library. Now, there's teacher librarians that have their education degree as well as their librarian degree. I'm just doing the librarian part at the moment. So I pretty much run the day-to-day how the library works. So I'm checking in, checking out the books. I'm shelving books. I'm helping kids find books. I'm helping kids with their research assignments. And it's really busy and it's great. And my favourite thing is having a student come in who, I hate reading, but my teacher told me I have to check out a book. And so I love talking with them about, okay, well, let's talk about what movies you're into, what music are you into, what TV shows are you into, and then guaranteed there'll be a book about something that they're interested in. And then they come back a couple of days later and it's like, oh, I really love that and I'm ready to check out more books. So that just makes it all worthwhile. I absolutely love it.
Oh, Sarah, see, you are exactly the person we want in our kids' libraries. That is so cool.
I have to sometimes be like, you know, your kids are at this school, so the library is not a place at this school where you don't have to be quiet. It's a real hub, like before school, at break time and after school. The library is full of kids playing games, playing cards, chatting, catching up. It's got a real great community vibe about it, but there are times if the noise level gets a bit loud, I'm the one that has to be, you know, you've got to quieten down. Trying to be like that cool mum, like the cool librarian. Like, I'm like, hey, guys, you know, you've got to keep it down a bit because I don't want them to hate me. It's so embarrassing. Like, I'm trying to be cool for these kids.
That says, what were some of the other degrees that you started and stopped?
I started with a Bachelor of Arts, which I really, really loved, but I was like, well, what am I going to do at the end of this? So then I started primary school education because, again, being with kids, teaching, librarian stuff. So I started that and it just didn't float my boat. Then you and I collaborated and were doing Blogging Me and the podcast, and then I was like, right, well, I'm going to get into social media. I'm going to do an internet communications course and I'm going to be a social media guru. And while I loved that, again, it just wasn't, I don't know, it just didn't
Yeah.
Couldn't see myself doing it forever. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And then I was talking to my best friend back home and she's like, you've got to work with kids. Her daughter's got some special needs and she's like, you're so great with her and you're great with kids. Kids love you. You love kids. You don't get sick of them like so many other people do, and you've got to do something with kids. And she was right. And I didn't think I wanted to be in a classroom full time, but I wanted to be in an environment where I was helping out kids. So that's what led to the librarian.
And you've always loved books as well. Like you are a voracious reader and you love to talk about books and it kind of ties it all in. And I guess, it all makes sense now. But you just had to keep following your path. And, yeah, you and I have talked about this because we've talked about other people that we've interviewed who've started three or four different things and they feel like almost failures as they're going along, that it didn't work and it didn't work. And almost like there was one woman I remember we spoke to who said she kind of felt like the object of ridicule because it was like, oh, you've started that again, you know, you're not going to finish it.
I've had people say that to me. I've had people laugh and, oh, yeah, as if you're going to finish that. But I don't feel like a failure at all. My dad always said any education is good education. So I just feel it just took me a while to find what I wanted to do, because had we been back home, I either would have stayed in advertising or I would have been a stay-at-home mum. Do you know what I mean? They would have been the two things that I would have done. But when you move overseas and all of a sudden your whole lifestyle changes and what you're doing day-to-day changes. And I think also doing the podcast and the biggest thing I ever took away from the podcast was, well, what happens if your husband ups and leaves you or drops dead tomorrow? What are you going to do?
Yes.
And that is the biggest thing I took away from that after
me
the
too.
Women that interviewed. It's like, right, I've got to keep going, because if, you know, the man travels all the time, what if he's, like we always joke, he's got a second wife in Cairo called Fatima. what happens if Fatima actually eventuates or, you know, something terrible happens, touch wood. So that was another big thing.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And look, Suze, I would say the same thing. And I think we did so many episodes at the beginning that were kind of around that. We did expat death and we did expat divorce. Yeah. And I remember you and I saying, we probably need to find something cheery to talk about next week.
Let's do the sex episode.
Okay, Suze, well, thank you. I think I really wanted to talk to you, A, because I think people are missing you and they want to catch up with you, but also because your story is just perfect for career and keep plugging away at it and being able to get exactly what you want.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any harm in trying different things until you find what fits, and knowing that you can come from having, you know, this big whiz-bang career, and sometimes things have to change when you're moving overseas and when you add children into the mix and dynamics change. There's no harm in, because I sometimes think, oh, I've just taken this massive step back, but I haven't, because I finally found something that I loved advertising and PR, but that's just not me anymore. I don't want to work long hours. I don't want to travel. I've already got one person in his family doing that. I don't think we could cope with two of us doing that. Do you know what I mean? So, and the whole thing of keeping your skills up to date, working, because you just never know what could happen tomorrow.
I've said it before, I think it's amazing that she's just found her passion and gone with it. And it's, I mean, I listened to the episode that you guys, the podcast you did about passions, and I just get blown away by people that are so committed and understand what their passions are and are so dedicated to it. And it just sounds like she just loves being a librarian. I mean, obviously there is real life stuff that has to be dealt with along the way, and she seems to be kicking butt at that too.
Yeah, no, she really, really does love it. And, you know, it's that thing, it all makes sense now, but at the time it wasn't the obvious thing, but it makes complete sense for Suze to do it. Now, I want to listen to, you spoke to Gabrielle. Tell me about Gabrielle.
She's an expat from the UK. She's been away for about 20 years, and they deliberately decided they wanted to be expats when they had children because she wanted the opportunity to stay at home, and they realized that they couldn't do that in the UK. Anyway, you can listen to her story.
When I was in the UK, I worked as an occupational therapist, and I worked mainly mental health in several different specialities. And that was really, yeah, I thought it was my career path for life. I never imagined all the changes that were going to happen and how I would develop myself and my career in different paths. Yeah, my husband found a job in Bangkok. So finding myself in Bangkok with two small children, yeah, at first I felt a little bit lost. I wasn't a natural expat. I was quite shy and probably a bit of an introvert. It was busy, chaotic. It took quite a while for me to find my feet there. Yes, as the girls got older and we added a third daughter to the family, and when she started nursery school, I started to think about what I could do again and whether I could go back to occupational therapy. And there were a couple of opportunities, but they weren't really in my field. I'd always had an ambition to have my own business, so I sort of looked for a niche in the market, and one of my ideas was that expat women, one of the main problems was finding lingerie, underwear.
Yes.
So I mentioned this idea to a friend, and she was very keen to join me as well. So the two of us set up our own brand of lingerie, and it was great fun, and it was very successful from the word go. I mean, our launch party, we sent out 500 invites, and we had 600 people turn up, and we had an amazing fashion show with friends of ours all modeling, and it was just incredible. And you know, we found that two of our friends had been professional lingerie models in the past, and then I found that one of my neighbors had worked in Paris in the lingerie fashion shows there, doing the body makeup. So she did that for us. So all these people just came out and helped us. And we wanted to really promote the fact that we were making lingerie for, you know, every shape and size of woman. And it was very popular. What I found was doing that business, and because we had to go out and promote ourselves, and then we were selling and we were doing every side of the business, it really built up my confidence. I really started to notice myself changing, and I've just through that becoming a lot more outgoing and a lot more confident. But another ambition that I'd always had was to become a midwife. Anyway, I trained as a doula, and part of the training included using hypnosis for birth, to prepare the couple for birth and actually during labor and birth. I loved doing that. I supported a lot of couples, and as I worked with them, I became more and more interested in the hypnosis side of things, because I saw what a massive difference it made to women when they were in labor, to be able to use hypnosis to really maintain a feeling of calmness, of being in control, and reducing any discomfort that there might be in. So then I decided to train more fully in hypnotherapy, and I really fell in love with hypnosis and hypnotherapy and all the benefits that that can bring to people. And so then I started working more and more just in the field of hypnotherapy and using my mental health roots and background to help people who are suffering from depression, anxiety, phobias, as well as sort of making behavioral changes such as, you know, stopping smoking or losing weight. So yeah, I've come on a long journey, almost, you know, quite a random path to get to this point, and you know, just finding the right courses, and sometimes it just felt like those were appearing at the right time. But really, when I first became an expat, I couldn't imagine that happening, because, you know, I was struggling with it so much.
But do you think that you would have come to this had you stayed in the UK and just gone on the path if you hadn't become an expat?
I really don't know. And it's one that, it's a question that I've thought about, you know, a lot. And I'm not sure that I would have, because I think being an expat, it does give you a lot more opportunities, but to take maybe a step back or to take a breather, take some time for yourself and to grow as a person in other ways. And I think if I'd stayed in the UK, I probably would have stayed working as an OT. Being an expat, although it was uncomfortable for me at first, it really pushed me to develop the confidence in myself, to, you know, really go out and mix with lots of different people, meet so many different people from different walks of life, and see people that were taking different career paths and people who having to reinvent themselves over and over again. Because now, you know, I can go and give talks about what I do, you know, and I've hypnotized 200 people in a room and given a talk about hypnosis. And I'm not sure I ever would have had the confidence to do that. But, you know, who knows? I mean, it's just an unknown, really.
I loved with Gabrielle when she talked about when she started working in OT and she just thought that was going to be her career path in life. And I think, you know, so many of us, and maybe that's because what our parents did, you know, most of our parents stayed in that one career for life.
Yeah, I think we're probably the first generation that does change careers. I think there's a stat on it for Gen Xers, the first generation that really can consider career changes quite often.
Yeah, yeah. But I loved when she talked about the fashion parade, and I just had this big smile on my face thinking about these amazing expat women when she was talking about all the hidden talents that came out, which happens all the time in the expat world. You know, there'll be someone who you're sitting with and you suddenly find out they're a dentist, and then someone else offers to cut your hair out of nowhere because they're a hairdresser.
That happened to me the other day. It was a coffee morning and I was talking to a lady who I see every Saturday teaching swimming at the pool, and we were talking about her and she was talking about her job, her old job, and we said, oh, what did you do? She said, I'm a chemical engineer, but now I'm a swim teacher. So she says those things happen all the time. And I also loved about Gabrielle was that one of her neighbours did body makeup for lingerie shows in Paris. You just happened to live next door or down the street. So I also spoke to my friend Ava. Now, Ava is Dutch, and she I met her in South Africa, and she had just recently moved there. Then I left to go to the US, and 12 months later, she left to go to the US. But she moved to Bentonville, Arkansas, which you might think is in the middle of America, and you could be right. But Bentonville, Arkansas is the headquarters of Walmart. And Walmart is quite an international company, and they require that all their suppliers have offices in Bentonville. So Bentonville actually has quite a large expat community for being a small American town in the middle of the country.
I had no idea.
Yes, it's kind of cool. We went there. We went to the Walmart Museum and everything.
Okay, let's have a listen to Ava.
So I'm from the Netherlands, from The Hague, and we went to South Africa first. Years and years ago, I studied European and international law, and then I started working for the government and did all kinds of assignments. And I especially liked the communication aspects of those assignments, and I loved organizing, for example, a huge festival about innovation. So, like, how can you transform the way the government thinks and organize itself, and how can you change the way they execute things?
Yeah.
And then, in the meantime, I had 3 children, and when the youngest was 3 weeks old, Joost, my husband, was offered a job in South Africa. We moved 4 months later. So Bobby, that's the youngest, was 5 months old. And then we moved. And we had never been there, and I didn't know a lot about the country. And then we knew it was a fabulous holiday destination. And then I also found out that it was really hard for me to be able to work there. So the first months were for settling in and meeting new people and finding your way around. And then when I felt comfortable enough to leave the youngest with Vivian to help in the house, I thought, well, now what am I going to do? So it actually brought back memories of my first days at that innovation project. But the first day I said, so what is my job description? And then they said, well, you can do whatever you like. What do you like to do? And that's a really hard question. So I procrastinated, and I first blamed my husband because he got me into this. And so he should get me out of it. And that didn't work. And it didn't, because only you can make yourself happy. And I knew that, but it's pretty hard when you're in a situation and you want to get out of it. But then I read the book Flow, and the book is about how to reach the flow state of mind, like being in the groove. So I thought, well, okay, now I have to take responsibility and stop blaming my husband, like, all the time, maybe only now and then.
Yeah.
And then I started writing a blog about life, because I knew I liked to write, and I just wrote about things that happened and tried to do it as funny as possible. And I did it weekly, and it helped me to focus and plan my day and get, you know, get better at writing. And then after a while, I started writing for two other blogs, so for Dutch companies that owned the blog.
Yeah.
So I basically just started doing something that I knew I liked doing, and then, well, take it from there. So step by step, I started that. And then at the same time, so Anne, who gave me the book, we were walking on a really nice South African market, and we thought, well, wouldn't it be nice if we could sell something here? And then we brainstormed about a baby sleep sack idea. So baby sleep sacks is what a baby sleeps in, and they are really popular in Europe, and they didn't have those in South Africa. So we thought, well, maybe we can start that. And that's how we started Cowgirls, a business in baby sleep sacks. So we just started producing it, and then we figured out where to buy fabric, and we figured out how to make a pattern, and we found someone who could sew. So Tiny started sewing for us, and then we started a little business. So it was really nice, and then eventually we even sold at shops and did like a fashion show, because from sleeping bags we made skirts, and then we made some little girls' clothes, and it was just really, really, really nice. Well, what next happens in the expat world is that Joost got offered a new job in a totally different part of the world. So that was really hard, because, you know, when you own a small business, it's just a small business. And that's also what people said when we asked around, what should we do? And then they said, well, you either go big or you go home. And, well, I think you can make, like, a big impact with a small business if you do it with your whole heart. But if you have to move and leave a country, then it's going to be rather difficult. If you start it together, and then it's difficult to keep it up on your own. And we've looked at possibilities to make it a big company. We even found some professional business investors. But, you know, eventually it was that was not going to work. So we just did one big fashion show with one of the shops we were selling through. And then, you know, well, we kind of ended the business. In the United States, I already had a blog. So I started a second blog. Routines about family rituals, because my kids were growing really fast, and maybe that's also what you notice when you're an expat, that you kind of see them grow, because you've been in a country for 3 years, and then you see what they've done in 3 years, and then they all of a sudden they don't have tiny feet anymore, but they have big feet, and then you suddenly see that they grow so fast. And then I was thinking, am I remembering the right things? So, and I was wondering, are we all remembering the right things, and are we taking pictures of the right things? So my family rituals are really the small rituals. So I wanted to interview people about things they do every day, which are not really special, but might be special when you think back of it. Like you have breakfast every day, or you bath the children every day, and for the children it's really nice to remember, but you never take pictures of it. So I started interviewing people about that, and then I pitched it for a magazine, so a local Arkansas magazine, and I did an interview for that magazine every month, so that was published, and I started drawing with it, so I illustrated it. Then a Chinese lady, she used to work with Yoast, moved to New York, asked me to write a book about her daughter because she read my blogs and she really liked it. So then I started doing that project. It just kind of happened, but I think maybe things happen because you take one step and then, well, it leads to another. I've learned that I really like to write. I learned that I really like to illustrate. I learned that I really like to tell stories. So it would be a waste if I wouldn't continue, I think.
Do you think that you would have found those passions and talents if you hadn't had the time away?
No, I don't think so. I think really brave people do. They just quit their job and then they choose a totally different path. But for me, it was, I think, I feel really lucky that we moved. I didn't feel like that in the beginning at all, because we moved for Yoast's job and just accompanying him was it. But now that we've been away for 5 years and I'm looking back on what I've been able to do, I feel really lucky that I've been able to, well, learn totally different things and see so many things. And it's been such a journey.
I loved Ava's story. There were so many things that I agreed with or identified with, but I loved it when she said the comment about waiting for her husband to fix it. You know, you brought me here, so you should fix it. And it hadn't occurred to me, you know, because we've talked about this before, about how many times you irrationally get angry with your partner because for some reason it's their fault. Do you know, like I got lost today on the side of the road and it's your fault. And yeah. It all sort of clicked for me. Well, yeah, it's that whole, well, you brought me here, so you need to fix it.
Yes. But then she read the book. Now, have you read that book? Did you say
I haven't read that book. What is that book?
I don't know, but maybe I have to go and read it now so I can help take responsibility and stop blaming my husband for bringing me the homework.
And when she talked about starting the blog to sort of give her some focus and build it from there, that's the bit that I kind of touched on before, is you've just got to start something. Do you know, and not everybody's going to start a blog. Maybe some people are going to start taking photos, or some people are going to start painting something, or some people, I think you've just got to start with something, whether you're going to be volunteering somewhere or offering to help out somewhere. You know, I don't think you can find your passion without sort of taking those baby steps towards it.
Yeah, you can't sort of sit at home and look at the vase of flowers on my dining room table and suddenly find your passion. You have to do something. And I also like what she said about it gave her structure to her day and it gave her goals and things to do. So she was struggling with what to do, and part of that was having sort of time that she didn't have before, and she had to find a way to deal with that. So I thought that was also really interesting. And the other thing that I loved about both of them is that there's kind of a thread that runs through it, all the two interviews that I did, which was they both started small businesses with friends, and that helped them, both of them, develop confidence to do other things. And that's kind of like the expat women thing, right? So everyone's looking out for each other and sort of they're supporting each other, which I think is kind of, and that's like a recurring theme of the podcast, like every, you know, all the episodes kind of come with this whole, there's a huge supportive community.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's why, you know, I sound like a broken record when I keep saying how amazing expat women are and they don't realise how amazing they are. But that's it, because I just don't think you hear the same stories in maybe expat male communities with that same support, and, you know, and maybe that's something they need to work on.
Yes.
but you see it with expat women all the time. They're unique in that, you know, you could go in a large sort of expat area, and I know I could definitely do it here. I used to do a lot of writing in coffee shops because I found I wrote faster and got less distracted because I would just sit in a coffee shop. But I would see women around me connecting all the time, and I know I could go down and do it at a coffee shop now if I wanted to, where you would see two women who maybe have different accents, but they have kids the same age, or they happen to live in the same compound, or they've gone to the same swimming class, or something's happened and they've reached out and kind of grabbed hold of each other to get through this experience of moving together.
And what she said, also what Ava said about being brave. So, you know, if you stay where you are and do it, like quit your job and look for something, you're called brave. But if you move to another country, you have to do it. You know, there are a lot of situations where you don't have a choice.
Yeah, yeah.
And it kind of reminds me about what you've said about people who live in remote Australia who mm-hmm. may or may not be listening to our podcast. Hello, Miss Shadi and the gang. So that they don't necessarily have the support and infrastructure either. So they're kind of in the same situation as expats, in that they're somewhere where they don't have a lot of support or whatever, and they just have to get on with it.
Yes, and just talking about our Outback women, I have joined a group on Facebook with Miss Shadi. Miss Shadi is trying to lose a little bit of weight at the moment, and yeah. I don't know, have you seen it, this Facebook group?
Has she given up Shadi to do that?
She has cut back on the Shadi. Okay. I think she's no Shadi during the week maybe. she's cut back on the – Miss Shadi has cut back on the carbies. she has this group called Shed It With Shards.
And Shed It With Shards.
Yeah, I'll get a link if anyone else is interested in joining it. But when you were talking about those Outback women, because I'm in it, I've lost 2 kilos in the last 2 weeks, and it's there's no rhyme or reason with what you should be doing. It's basically like a little support group of people that all want to lose some weight before Christmas, and we're all kind of egging each other along. I can't remember the last time I consciously was careful about what I ate.
I find good excuses, like I'm living in a new country and it's pretty depressing. So I should just have that piece of chocolate, because now I'm in a country where there's good chocolate, because really America is not the best for that.
But I got off track. What I was going to say about Miss Shadi in the kind of Outback group of people was, there was a fantastic video yesterday where one of the people in the group was in her wool shed showing us how to do exercises.
In the wool shed.
And she this is that whole thing about just get off your bum and do it. There she was at the wool shed taking a video of, you know, this is how you do this particular exercise, go out and do it. And same sort of thing. And you see that in the expat world all the time, you know, suddenly women go, I'm going to become a certified fitness instructor. I'm going to become a share broker. I'm going to go and do this study, and I'm going to become that person because that's what I want to do. And I think that's a little bit of a gift that travel gives you, particularly if you're traveling with a partner and you have, you know, moved with their job. A lot of people say, I sacrificed my career for my partners. But then there's a lot of other people saying, well, yes, I walked away from my career for my partners, but then that gave me the opportunity to be able to focus on something new.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're in a relationship, you make the decision together. I mean, it's hard, and one of you does maybe feel gypped, but maybe the one who doesn't give up the career feels gypped because they have to work all the time and travel and be away from their family. And, you know, not saying I don't complain, but I'm just saying there is choices everywhere. And I think it's a very difficult situation, as an article that you're going to talk about a little bit later deals with.
Yes, yes. I can't wait to talk to you about that. Okay, so voice messages this week. Oh, my, that was hysterical, that voice message that came through. And can I just remind everyone that you can leave us a voice message if you go to twofatexpats.com and you click on the microphone on the side of the page that says, hi, leave us a message. You can record a message and say hi to us, which we would absolutely love, and particularly if you want to talk about anything that we have talked about today. But yes, this week's message was from your friend Nicole.
My friend Nicole, who is hilarious. So she left a message to remind me to stop being so weak about not having friends. Because South Africa's a tough country, and people can say to you, as I thought she was repeating one of my stories back to me, but actually it's also her story, that people can say to you, you're very nice and I like you a lot, but my husband would never have an Australian in the house, so you can't come round. So it was so lovely to hear from her.
The other thing that we're doing is reading our book, Diplomatic Incidents. How
you're finished.
I am finished. It's a short book, right? It wasn't, it's quite an easy read. And I think we will talk about it next week, don't you?
I do think we will.
Do you know what I'm thinking? I think what would be a really great thing to do would be to ask people what their diplomatic incidents were. Like when have...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. When have they been in a situation where they've had a diplomatic incident and...
Or an undiplomatic incident.
And it would be great to talk to people about that. And if you've read the book, I desperately want to hear from you as well. And we could maybe talk to some people. But, yes, if anyone knows the author, Cherry Denman, and knows how we can get in contact with her, what I'll do is seek her out this week as well. I promise that I will, hand on heart, go and track down Cherry Denman and ask her about her book.
Author to author.
Not going to give up.
Now, about that, so you're going to Singapore for a big fat expat meetup in about 10 days.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yes. Yes, I am.
No, I think it's 2 weeks.
Yes. Which, when you think how particularly nervous I was about going to Abu Dhabi to have coffee with, you know, three or four people, I now, when I said new Kirsty is putting herself out there, this is all about the new Kirsty, and now new Kirsty is going to get on a plane and go to Singapore and have lunch with a whole bunch of people in Singapore, and I'm going to write something in particular for the day, hopefully. That will happen, maybe on the plane, knowing me.
No. Okay, so you're going. And I want to tell you that we talked about it and we thought, oh, how many people, you know, would it be about 30 or what do you think? On the first day, Kirsty, we sold 25 tickets on the first day. And I think something's just come in while we've been on the podcast talking, recording. So yeah. More tickets underway. So it's going to be at the Hilton on Orchard Road. And it's $50 Singapore dollars.
Yes.
And what can people expect for their $50 Singapore dollars, Kirsty?
For their $50 Singapore dollars, they can expect a beautiful and delicious buffet lunch with a glass of wine. And wine's not cheap in Singapore. Oh. So, yes, come along, have a glass of wine, something to eat. I'll be there and we'll do some Q&A and a little reading. And we're going to have some prizes.
So one of the great prizes may be a Skype session or two with Kirsty Rice about the topic of your choice, writing, blogging, social media, podcasting.
Yeah, yeah, and actually that's a point because this was your idea, Nikki. I'm not putting my hand up to say that I was at all involved in this because I wasn't, because in my mind you know that I was thinking who on earth would want to talk to me over Skype, but you assure me that someone will.
Someone will, and it's a raffle for a lot of things or a chance to get a lot of things. So this is just one of the things.
And maybe you don't want to blog or write, but maybe you might want some tips on social media for for your business, which I could definitely help you out with as well. So that could be one of the raffle prizes, perhaps.
Or maybe you just want to fangirl and hang out with Kirsty on Skype for an hour.
Okay. Now, I wanted to talk about, because, you know, at this time of the podcast, we always start to talk about what we're reading and listening to. And there was an article this week that I read, and it's not new. It's old.
No, I've read it before.
Yes. It was written back in 2012, and maybe I read it and I've just forgotten about it, but I read it a couple of days ago and I just absolutely loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And it's an article from The Atlantic, and it was written by Anne-Marie Slaughter, who was the first woman director of policy planning at the State Department in the US. And she's an international lawyer, foreign policy analyst, political scientist and public commentator. And she's currently working as the president and CEO of New America and is the former president of the American Society of Law, International Law. So as you can see, yeah, she's a massive underachiever.
Yeah, massive, massive.
So I hadn't seen this sort of response to Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In, because there, I have always had a bit of a, I don't know, an itch or an irk towards Lean In. It missed a lot. It didn't address, you know,
well, she's come out, since she's been so tragically widowed, she has come out and said, yeah, about that, you know. I mean, she has revised it and said that there were things that she missed and admitted that. But did you, and just off topic, tiny second, it's not really off topic, The Wife Drought by Annabelle Crabb.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah.
So it was kind of like, when I was telling someone, I'm like, it's like Australia's version of Lean In, but it's better.
Yeah. Yes, The Wife Drought, and I remember talking about it on the podcast as a book that I had read, and that was one of those books that I think I read it in about 24 hours, because it was just it was statistics. It was fact. You couldn't argue with anything that Annabelle Crabb had to say in The Wife Drought, because it was all there statistically in front of you. And I need to go back and read that again, actually. I think I should almost read it once a year, because I think it's just brilliantly said. So Anne-Marie Slaughter's piece kind of starts with saying that when she worked in academia, it was easier family-wise than when she began working in the government. So she'd had a job working as a law professor at Princeton, and
which I'm sure is just an easy everyday job.
But she was saying that once she started working for the government, that her work week would start at 4:20 a.m. So I think I identified with a little bit of that on a Monday morning. But she was getting up to be on the train at 5:30, going from Trenton to Washington, and it ended late on the Friday when she was going on the train home. And she said that her days were just crammed with meetings, and when the meetings stopped, the writing work began, and there was a never-ending stream of sort of memos and reports and comments on other people's drafts. And she said for 2 years she never left the office early enough to go to any stores other than those that were open 24 hours, which meant that everything from dry cleaning to hair appointments to Christmas shopping, you know, birthday party shopping, whatever, all had to be done on the weekends. And I just read this whole piece nodding my head at just sort of how hectic her work life was, and she just couldn't sort of fit in any other bits of her life. And what I loved was her pure honesty of how that was affecting her and her family.
Yeah. I mean, I find it so hard, because I think about, you know, why shouldn't women have that? Why shouldn't they? Men do it all the time. But one thing she said, and she could no longer be the parent and the professional that she wanted to be. So it was like an internal choice. So she said her husband was very supportive and he did all the things, but she felt that it was her choice.
Yeah, so there's a paragraph in it where she says, and I'm going to quote what she actually says. She says, I've come to believe that men and women respond quite differently when problems at home force them to recognise that their absence is hurting a child, or at least that their presence would likely help. I do not believe fathers love their children any less than mothers do, but men do seem more likely to choose their job at a cost to their family, while women seem more likely to choose their family at a cost to their job. And I thought what she was saying, and I don't want anyone to be misconstrued, she wasn't saying that, you know, this is just a woman's lot that she has to bear. She was saying we need to change what's happening in society because there's a reason men can do that and a reason that women feel that way. Like, this society has made us feel that way.
Yes, but do you think even if there was the expectation of that women still feel differently regardless of societies, you know, because of their makeup, because of the chromosomal makeup or their gender, or do you think that's purely society based? That's what I struggle with. That's the struggle I have.
Yeah, me too. And I think that message at the end that she said about if women were ever to achieve real equality as leaders, that they had to stop accepting male behaviour and male choices as the default and the ideal. Like, maybe it's just not meant to be like that. Maybe the way that blokes have been doing it for all these years is just wrong. And and that we have to, in her words, insist on changing social policies and sort of bending career tracks to accommodate people's choices, and that we have the power to do that if we decide to do it, because we need to get the men on board with it, of saying, you know, because there's all this discussion about, well, yeah, maybe the right time for you to zoom in your career doesn't have to be in your 30s. It could be in your 40s. And, you know, that we have...
that's a whole other thing. That's a whole other thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I just found the article really interesting. So I will leave a link, because I thought it was... It's a long, long read. You definitely need a cup of tea and a biscuit to get through it, which, of course, I'm not having the biscuit.
Or milk in the tea.
I have drank so much green tea, it's not funny. So what have you been watching or listening to, Nikki?
Oh, well, I have to say, I'm confessing, I've been watching a bit of a binge fest of Rain on Netflix.
I don't know Rain.
Have you seen Rain?
No, what is Rain?
Well, it's a bit of a bodice-ripping drama. It's not quite Outlander, but... it's a period piece based fairly loosely, I imagine, on the life of the Queen, Mary, Queen of Scots. And, you know, they're basically all teenagers running around, but they were in real life. But in the show, they're not so teeny. And it just, I don't know, it's just good to switch off and watch. And there's a lot of, I'd like to say there's a lot of strong female characters, which there are, but that's not really why I'm watching it.
Okay. Have you seen Catastrophe?
I have not seen Catastrophe, but I saw you write it in the show notes, so I'm interested to hear about it.
So Catastrophe, Greg and I actually started watching Catastrophe a while ago, and like I'm saying, a year or so ago, and loved it, absolutely loved it, and then forgot about it. But now they have season two and it's just as good. So the idea of Catastrophe is about a one-night stand, basically. Well, it kind of goes for about a week, where an Irish school teacher picks up this American Rob in a bar, and they have this really wild weekend and they have a really good time, and then he goes back to Boston and then she rings him and says that she's pregnant. And he has to come back and see her, and it's kind of about how that all pans out. But it is brilliantly written. Like, it is side-splitting funny. And
is it on Netflix?
I was watching it on iTunes when I watched season one. I don't know if is on Netflix. I'll have to check if it is. Okay. If you're in Australia, you can watch it on iView, because it's season two is out on iView. But we watched it on iTunes, and it's very, very funny. If you're into British humour, I should say that, because I wonder whether it won't make the jump into American humour. Yeah, across the pond. I'm not sure. Sometimes British humour just doesn't work with Americans, does it?
No. And what about listening? What are you listening to?
Well, I've been listening to my daughter because I've got Lizzie home from boarding school. She goes back on Sunday, but she's been home for the last 2 and a bit weeks, which has been phenomenal, as you can imagine. I know. So my car time, she's been in the car with me most days. So we haven't done a lot of podcast listening. So we've done a lot of talking about her doing the IB next year and how that's all going to work, because she has decided that she's going to do the IB. So okay. anyone who can remember, I put out a note a while ago saying to IB or not IB, that is the question. And she has decided that she wants to do it, even though it's probably going to be about 4 or 5 hours worth of homework every night to do it. But she really wants to do it, so we will go down that track. And we've been talking about the shoes that she finally got yesterday. That did you get Roams when you were younger? Can you remember Adidas Roams?
No, I can't. That must have been a South Australian thing.
Well, they were these white sort of – they must have been. And I was in – I reckon about year 10, and they were these white sneakers with blue stripes on the side. And everybody
– Adidas – Dunlop Volleys.
No, they're no, no. Dunlop Volleys. These were Adidas, yes. And they were called Roams. I'm going to have to go and search it up. I'll put a picture of them. I'll put a picture up in the show notes. So, yes, that's the new thing at the moment. Everybody has these Adidas sneakers. I have had both daughters request it. It'll only be a matter of time before my sons come as well. So that's the other thing. And we've also had some really good conversations about, because she's been back, she's obviously been back with all of her old friends, and she's been out to dinner with friends, and she's been at sleepovers, and it's weird because she's actually she's staying at a friend's house tonight as well. I get her back tomorrow. So it's already kind of feels a bit weird that she's not here, and she's gone back to school with her and is going back to school for a couple of days. But yesterday she said that one of her friends had asked her, if you could come back tomorrow, you know, and go back to school here, would you do it? And that she had to kind of politely sort of say, well, no, I don't think I would. And so it was interesting having that conversation too.
Yeah, but that's so great that she – well, that she told you about it.
Yeah.
and that she feels that way as well.
Oh, yeah, it's brilliant that she feels that way. And it's brilliant. It's for me, it's been sort of fascinating watching the whole thing unfold. Do you know, we're in – it was February, beginning of February that she started, and now we're in October, and, you know, she's about to start term four. She's now shared 3 different rooms with 3 different girls. She's been and stayed with friends. She now has friends from the city and friends from the country. You know, she's evolved into this whole different creature, and I think maybe in that first term she probably would have considered coming back, whereas now it's nice to hear her say, no, you know, I've made the right decision. This was what I was meant to do. This is working out for me. So, yeah, it is. It's fantastic to sort of hear that.
Excellent. Well, I was listening to a podcast this week. I went back to No Filter with Mia Friedman. Yeah. And she watched the second US presidential debate with Amelia Lester, who's a recently returned journalist from the US. She was a former managing editor of The New Yorker, and now she's an editor of Good Weekend in Australia. And they watched the debate together, and then they immediately recorded the episode. And Mia's not backwards in coming forwards with her views about American politics. So it was very interesting. And I'm, of course, obsessed with American politics. So it was really interesting to listen to their view of the debate. One, from Mia, who's in Australia and has never lived in America to my knowledge. And two, from Amelia, who has lived in America but lived in a totally different part of America than I lived in. And it just really reinforced to me when she was talking about Americans and Americans' viewpoints. I was thinking that's so different to a lot of the experience that I had. So it just reinforced to me, which is something that every expat learns, you can never really know a culture unless you live there. and you spend time, you know, unpacking everything that goes into it and why, and that every country actually has more than one kind of subculture
or
group.
Yeah.
So,
and it's so annoying, isn't it? Because I completely agree with you in that if you live on the west coast of Canada, you will meet a completely different Canadian that you will meet on the east coast of Canada. And America's exactly the same. And I don't you see it too, like when you're an expat and you're with fellow Australians and an American or a Brit or someone who's Dutch or Japanese will ask you a question about Australia. So in Australia, do you guys think this? And your Australian friend will answer on behalf of Australia and you're thinking, I don't think that at all. Yeah.
No, I think, and that's the thing, like stereotypes are a thing and they're, you know, they're funny sometimes and sometimes they can be useful, I guess, but they're just so not true because every person and every region and every group has its own story. And so that's kind of, you know, I've always been interested in that kind of thing.
And Mia, I think, is spending a lot more time in America now because she has an office in New York.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, they have Flo and Frank, which is a whole new website in America, and she's been spending quite a bit of time there. But New York is definitely a subculture of America. It's nothing like the rest of America.
No. Absolutely. I would agree with that. And it was just so interesting to hear Amelia say, well, Americans think this. And I was like, yes, I agree with her to a point, but actually I also think Americans think all these other things. And it was really interesting. It really made it so clear to me that, you know, where you live within, even within a certain country really impacts your experience of the country and the culture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Unless maybe you live in Doha, because that's really all there is Doha.
Everything I read is Doha is an up-and-coming city. It's the cities you want to live in the next 10 years. Doha's on all the lists ever see.
Yeah, I am loving living in Doha at the moment. I did fall out of love with Doha for a little while, but I am absolutely loving it at the moment. And, there is so much going on here and there's been a lot of development here and I can really see it now, having been here for a while, of how far we've come. And I agree, Doha's a great place to live, and I think it just was rated the second safest city in the world.
Yeah, that could possibly be true.
Yes,
Hamburg was in the top 10 safest cities or best places to live or something. I'll look that up. I'll put that article up there too.
Okay. Okay. Al, you've got a shout out to someone.
I do have a shout out. My shout out is to Meredith, who's my co-room mother, who's shouldering the load for Class 4MD. Because you know how sometimes there's two class parents, but one is like the go-to parent and she goes to all the meetings or he or she and then sets up all the WhatsApp groups and like does all the coordination. So I'm a co-class parent, but I'm not that person. That person is Meredith. And right now she's in a meeting about fourth grade Halloween game day.
And you're not.
And I'm not. So I said I'd give her a shout out to say hi.
Just a reminder, next week we're going to be talking to Cherry, hopefully, so she can talk about her book, Diplomatic Incidents. And we want to hear from you about your diplomatic incidents and things that may have gone a little bit pear-shaped in the location that you were in, where you may have thought you were going to be deported or or arrested. And so that'll be next week.
Perfect. Well, I'll speak to you then.
Okay. We'll see you later.
Bye.